Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton, author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, and you are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. How's everyone doing? We're having a great week because our cookbook is almost here. It's coming out 10-10, the debut Cherry Bomb cookbook, and all our contributors have started posting pictures on social media, which is a lot of fun. And we are just about to announce all the tour dates. You can get a sneak peek if you go to cherrybomb.com. But we are kicking things off in Brooklyn on Friday, October 6th at Books Are Magic. Then we head to Seattle for a stop at Book Larder, which we love. Then San Francisco for Jubilee, as most of you know. And then we're headed to L.A. and then Indianapolis. We're stopping two stops in L.A. We're doing a cocktail party with Chef Sarah and Sarah at Kismet. Then we have a book signing at Barnes & Noble at The Grove, which is slightly terrifying because it's so big. And I was like, I don't have enough family members in Los Angeles to fill this place. So if you are listening and you live in the LA area, please, please, please come out on October 17th. We'll have a fun panel discussion with some gals from the LA food scene. Then we fly to Indianapolis and we have a stop at Print Text, which is a fantastic shop. You've probably heard us talk about it before. They specialize in magazines, and it's really such a gem. And we will be interviewing Martha Hoover, the restaurateur from Indy. So check it out, cherrybomb.com. We literally are adding more dates every day, so we would love to see all of you out on the road. This season of Radio Cherry Bomb is presented by Le Cordon Bleu. Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school, has locations around the globe, from Paris to London to Ottawa. The schools have a wide array of programs available, from 9-month classical culinary training programs all the way to bachelor and master's degrees. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more. And special thanks to our sponsor, Castor and Pollux, maker of the brand new purposeful pet food line, Pristine. A lot of Bomb Squad members are proud pet parents, so you'll want to know about this grain-free line made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Visit purposefulpetfood.com for more. All right, now finally, we would like to welcome our first guest, Lydia Bastianich, the legend. Lydia is a queen of Italian cuisine. Through her TV shows, 11 cookbooks, did we get that right? 11 cookbooks and 4 New York City restaurants, the legendary chef is responsible for teaching countless people about Italy's famous dishes. We're so excited to catch up with Lydia about her brand new cookbook, Lydia's Celebrate Like an Italian, and what she's cooking these days. Lydia Bastianich, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Buongiorno. Pleasure.
I am so excited you're here. I was like reading all that stuff beforehand and I was like kind of laughing and I'm like, Lydia Bastianich is here with us. This is a big, big deal. We've only ever had you on a call-in show, sadly, after Judith Jones passed away.
That's right, yeah.
So we're happy you're here under happier circumstances.
Well, thank you, but I followed your success way back, because I think it's about 5 years ago, right?
It's almost 5 years. Feels like 100, but yes.
Yes,
it's
yes.
Almost
and,
five.
The magazine, the show, radio show, now the cookbook, the events that you do, the... you have one coming in California.
We do. Jubilee. San Francisco.
So good for you.
Thank you very much. You know, we need to get you in the magazine. We talked to Brooks Headley, of all people,
yes,
about doing a story with you. And I don't remember what happened. It fell apart somehow.
There was a very initial, I think it was your first or second issue. And I was very excited. But then it fizzled out. But I said, you know, things come back. You know, you put things back on the flame.
And you know that. I mean, you work in media, too. You're like as much of a chef as a media person these days. So we will circle back to that 100%. And we did try to put together, actually, this was... The last two Jubilees, I didn't realize how ill Judith was at that point. And we had tried 2 years in a row to put together a panel. The first one was, we wanted Judith there, and it was going to be like a tribute panel with you and Maher and everybody. And that didn't work out. And then the next year, I think Madhur was at Oxford or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, but we need to get you to Jubilee also.
Okay.
Who would you want to interview you at Jubilee, if you could pick anybody?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I'll leave that up to you. I think, you know, you have your own style, and I would like to be part of that style.
We would love that. We would love that. So we will talk more about that, but let's definitely make that happen, because we're giant fans, and, you know, you're really a trailblazer. I mean, it's easy to, like, throw that word around, but you really are an icon and a trailblazer and just an amazing role model to women in this industry.
Well, I'm, you know, in retrospect, I really feel good about it. The trip was, you know, as women in the industry, wasn't an easy trip. I opened my first restaurant in 1971. Maybe for me it was a bit easier because it was a husband and wife team. But nonetheless, you know, when you faced the big players in the industry, I always got this kind of shout out response. So it's out there for us women in the industry. It's an uphill battle, but it's well worth it. And it's grand to see how many women have really made it and made their mark and are continuing in this industry.
Absolutely. I mean, you're one of the few examples from New York City. You know, New York City, when you compare it to, say, San Francisco, was not a great place for women chefs, for women restaurateurs. You know, when you look at who really gets a lot of the credit and gets a lot of the attention in New York until sort of April Bloomfield came along, you know, you were kind of it.
Exactly. You know, it was all about even as I might say, the Italian cuisine maybe didn't have the platform. It was much more kind of a sideline cuisine. Yes, it was the home cuisine and whatever that the Italians cooked, but it wasn't the presentable, the haute cuisine or whatever. You know, oddly enough, the tables have turned, and the cuisine that's really respected and appreciated and liked is the real cuisine that people cook at home. And so, you know, that's what I cook. That's my, but absolutely women have made it, and April Bloom is a great example of how she forges ahead. And, you know, but there's a lot of good.
There are so many great people now. But you are also doing it and having a family at the same time. You're a mom.
I think that for a woman, one of the biggest challenges is exactly that. You know, how do you handle a full-time career? Because being a chef, whether you're in the bakery department, whether you're in the garmangerie, whatever you are, you know, if you're in the kitchen, the hours are what they are. And the time that you are required to be there is precisely family time, you know, because that's when people go out and eat. And so how do you manage that, a family? Women in the industry, you know, you begin young, and usually you're in your really peak when you're also in your peak of having families and children. You know, how do you? It can be done. What I want to say that it can be done. You need support. I was lucky enough to have my family, my mother's support, especially. My mother is 97. She still lives with
me.
Yeah. We still kind of, let me tell you, she still kind of consults me. She says, no, like that. Like, she puts her two cents in still. And so it's important that you find some sort of a support system. And, you know, years back when I did open the restaurant and I got pregnant, I think, opening night, if you will, celebratory or whatever. 9 months later, my second child was born, Tanya. And so now I had to go back, a new restaurant, you know, you have loans to pay, what do you do? I went to actually the pediatrician because, you know, at that time, counseling and all of that didn't exist. So he was very wise. I told him that I felt I needed to be at the restaurant. We had loans to do. My part was empty at the restaurant, but yet I felt like a mother. You know, what am I going to do with this child? And he said, you know, children want happy families, happy parents. So you will find the space. Include the children in what you do. Bring them along. They love to be part. They understand. And so I did. My kids, you know, they were in the restaurant. They became part. And I felt kind of lighter about the fact. And I did what I did. I had a great time. And the time that I spent with them maybe was happier, including. And as you know, now both of them are back in the industry with
exactly.
me.
Exactly. Tell us about your kids, for those who don't know. Your kids. Tell us about your kids and what they do.
Well, Joe Bastianic, you know, partners with Mari Batali and restaurants. I wouldn't have grown as such in the industry had it not been for my children. So Joe was first in the Wall Street and then came back and said, you know, Ma, I really want to come back in our industry. And he applied his business knowledge in the expansion, of course, of all the restaurants that we have now. You know, whether it's Del Posto with Mari Batali, Babbo, Becco, Esca, you know, and Felidia. And my daughter, on the other hand, it was strange. She is an art historian. She actually, you know, because education was very important for me. She did get her PhD.
I see some, ignore me as I wave. Someone is here who yeah. is a giant fan of yours.
Okay.
And I'm like trying to say, look who's in the studio.
Okay.
You don't know who she is, but I'll tell you later. Hopefully sure. you can meet.
Sure. Okay.
Sorry, interrupted you. Back to your son and your empire.
My son and, you know, he's into TV now, Master Chefs and so on. And my daughter, who ultimately got her PhD in Renaissance art, and she was a professor in Italy while she was doing her thesis. She came back when she was expecting her first baby to be close to family. And while she was, if you will, gestating and then ultimately had the baby and all that, she began to help me, help do the research for the book. So she's very much involved in my production company, in my co-authored, my last four or five books, certainly the last one with her. She helps me a lot. So, you know, if you say, Lydia, how can you do all of this? I have a lot of help.
It takes a village, right? And how many grandchildren do you have now?
I have five grandchildren. Aww. And they range from 14 to 20 now. Two in college, three in high school. And love every bit of in, you know, I just went up last weekend. I went up to Boston. I have the granddaughter is at BC. And actually, my grandson, Lorenzo, was just a freshman in Harvard. But I was asked by Harvard, you know, they have this science class where they ask chefs to cook. And then the class studies the chemistry in that class for as a chemistry class. So it was wonderful. I went up there. And what I did a kind of a brunch for all the freshmen at the dorm, and we had a blast.
You're spoiling those kids.
No, I love it.
Are any of them future chefs or restaurateurs?
You know, I think, again, as I did with my children, I think what's important is that they get their education, that they educate themselves well. Some of them show promise? Yeah, I think two of them show promise.
So I always wondered, does the world owe you a debt of gratitude for Mario Batali's existence?
I think Mario Batali has an existence all of his own, but we just have a wonderful relationship. His energy, and I think that's part of how everything grows. You know, it's everybody blowing in the same direction. He's a marvel in the kitchen, and I call him my adopted son. And so we're having a great time, and I think the world really has a great time with Mario and what he does.
So I saw some fantastic photos of you online on eater.com about your garden. And we all want to come hang out with you in Queens. You're on the water.
Yeah.
Your garden is gorgeous. Can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, as I started my passion for cooking, I go back to being with Grandma. And Grandma, in the part of Italy that became Yugoslavia, was communist, so food was scarce. So she grew everything that we ate. And not only that, the husbandry of the animals. We had ducks, we had chickens, we had rabbits. We had pigs, two pigs a year, and we slaughtered them. We made prosciutto, we made bacon. But, you know, When I went to harvest the potatoes, we'd have plant the potatoes and then harvest them. The beans, shell the beans for the winter. And so that connection to food, the growth of food. You know, when you pick a potato out of the earth and it's still warm in your hand and it's, you know, it's not being cooked, it's just being picked, you know, you almost sense that it has life. And so I became, you know, very connected to food that way, the growing of food, then cooking it with my grandmother. So when we had to leave, actually, we escaped back into Italy and ultimately came to the United States, food was my connector, you know, to those times. And I needed the earth, too. So it's not a big garden, but, you know, this garden feeds us for the whole summer with tomatoes and eggplants and peppers. As if you saw the photos on Eaters, that's a reality. It's my mother and myself. She's 90-something, so we have somebody that helps us. But I just love it. You know, when it's time to eat, I said, okay, let me see what's out there. And I pick some vegetables, some herbs, whatever I have, and a piece of protein, and voila.
The garden looks like it could be on the cover of Martha Stewart. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, thank you. Well, maybe not. It's not as meticulous as I would say Martha's.
And you're right on the water.
We are. We are
so
right
beautiful.
On the water. Yeah, on the Long Island Sound.
So I guess my next question is, do you get to, now that, you know, you've worked so hard for so many years, do you get to enjoy your success?
I enjoy every day. I enjoy talking about food. I enjoy the garden. I enjoy, you know, going out and the television show, teaching, the restaurants. Right after this, I'll go back to Philidia, actually, and with the chef, we'll sit down, we'll review the menu. I love every part of it.
Oh, you seem so chill. I'm amazed. Uh-huh. You know, for someone who's got so many things going on, you did not show up with an entourage. We totally thought you'd roll up with an entourage.
Just by myself.
It's just you. And did I hear a rumor that you are the one who does your social media?
I do Instagram because I want to be, you know, what I do, I want to kind of send it out. And people sense that, you know, Lydia is doing that. And you know what they write to me? They write back, this is, Lydia, you know, maybe I couldn't do this or that, but I feel like I'm traveling with you. I feel like I'm doing things with you. And I like that, so I want to continue. But then I have, you know, like everybody else, I have a great team that follows on Facebook. I think they do all of that, yeah. So the Instagram and the tweet, I do myself.
So for someone, if there's anyone out there listening who hasn't cooked from your cookbooks yet, what is the Lydia Bastianich gateway recipe? Where should they start?
I think maybe read first all the introduction and my thoughts and my philosophy, my involvement in food, because, you know, I guess maybe my love affair with food. And they have to get into that. They have to understand that, because it's just not a recipe, a formula to follow. It's you have to take more than that in, the understanding of the product. And then the recipe, I lead you, hopefully, to a good place. And then what I also encourage them is to make the recipe their own, to even have the freedom of slightly change my recipes if they want. But I would say, you know, it's vegetables and pasta.
Vegetables and pasta, okay. Yeah. Some people are afraid to deviate from a recipe.
Well, I think that maybe that's correct. You know, if they have never done a pasta recipe or whatever, I will take you there. And I think what I pay a lot of attention to in my recipes is I want to make them successful in making that recipe. So it's not, I even work a recipe, even if it has 16 ingredients, kind of, I will make it concise. So and kind of accent certain flavors that they really make it flavorful, but not as complicated. So a recipe is a good beginning. Follow it, read it before, read the introduction, read what you know, and then get in there with passion, but not with trepidation. Release yourself. You know, if the first one doesn't come out perfect, you know, it happens. It's bound to happen. But then the second and the third will you'll get the knack of it.
I love release yourself. Lydia has given you permission to chill out. Okay, so I love the title of your new book, Lydia Celebrate Like an Italian, and I'll tell you why. I grew up in Staten Island, New York, but I'm Irish, Scottish, German, all of that. But you can't, back then, you couldn't grow up on Staten Island and not sort of be an honorary Italian, as you probably know, because you grew up in Queens, right?
Yes.
Here. So you know Staten Island. And Italian food is just always my favorite. And Staten Islands have their special pronunciation of Italian food. You know, you can't say mozzarella. You say mozzarella.
Mozzarella. Yes. Yes.
Exactly. And the first time I went to Italy, I would say, like, instead of ricotta, rugut. Or instead of manicotti, menagut, and no one knew what I was talking about.
No, that's the Italian-American. But that's a lot of the regional dialects of Italy that were brought in. You know, the pronunciation is in dialect, and so it makes a difference, absolutely.
So I'm all for celebrating like an Italian. So tell us about this cookbook.
Well, it's a cookbook that, you know... Because, you know, what's the next cookbook? And I have to make it meaningful. It's just not a collection of recipes. So, you know, I get a lot of questions on, you know, I'm having a christening, or I'm having the kids over for a graduation, or I'm having, I want to do a brunch or a picnic. And all of that is very, very Italian. And Italian food is so apropos for these kind of, you know, pulling it together. For example, so I give the different events, even how to set it up, how to multiply a recipe, because a recipe, if you get a recipe for 6 or 8, it doesn't equally multiply for 24. There's certain things that, you know, you increase, but certain things that you decrease. And so I give them instruction on how to do that, how to set a table. And also, for example, you know, you can have a great Italian feast, let's say, without even cooking. I mean, Italians are known for their antipasto. So you buy, and I go through all of the different cuts that you can buy, how to cut them, how to store, and then the marinated vegetables, and then the olives, and then the grilled marinated vegetables, and so on, and good bread. And you're on your way to a great party, some good wine or some nice drinks. I even do a kind of the Prosecco specials, you know, the aperitivo. And I even tell them how to end, you know, maybe have a dessert and a cordial party, you know, coffee. You might want, in Italy, it's done a lot, you know, in the afternoon especially, you have desserts and coffee and some cordials, and you have a get-together.
So let's say you live, I don't know, somewhere where you're lucky enough to have a decent grocery store or Italian specialty store, and you do need to put together an antipasto spread quickly. What should they run out and buy?
Well, I think, depends on how many people you have. Prosciutto, good prosciutto. But the prosciutto should be nice and thin sliced, and it should be sealed and not open until, you know, a few minutes before you set it out, because it oxidizes. So you need salami, you need mortadella, you need prosciutto, you need capocollo. And in meats, I think I like prosciutto cotto, which is a ham too, but it's the Italian ham, it's good. Then, of course, you need your cheeses. You need a good chunk of grana padano, some mozzarella, certainly, some blue cheese, a nice piece of gorgonzola, and maybe a taleggio, soft cheese. So you have your 4 cheeses, and, you know, get nice chunk, generous in it. Then the fresh vegetables that go with that. You get tomato, you get basil, you get cucumbers, you know, all of those fresh, wonderful that you can make a nice salad, like even a panzanella salad with some old bread in there. And then you go for the cured vegetable. Now, if you do your own, that's great. But otherwise, you know, we have peppers under oil, you have artichokes under, you have then anchovies, then you have sardines, then you have tuna, then you have olives, peperoncino, all of that. So you get as many of those giardiniera, you know, the mix of those vegetables, and you spread them out with the fresh vegetables. With the cheese, you also add a lot of fruits. Italians are all into fruits.
Such as?
Yes, grapes, plums, whatever it's in season, peach, you know, whatever it's in season. Pears go great with cheese, and nuts. You know, almonds, walnuts, pistachio, all of that. Now you can see already, then you get a diversity of breads. You know, you want a nice casareccio, homemade bread, focaccia, grissini of all kinds. And then you can buy also the little, the pugliese, the little kind of crunchy rings that they
oh,
the,
yes.
Taralli. Taralli. So you can buy all of that and be very Italian. You make a beautiful spread, you know, put herbs and some good wine, chilled good wine, white and red, and some Prosecco. And you know, you have a party.
So if your family's not Italian, and if you're not lucky enough to hang with Lydia, like Mario Batali is and all her other pals, you can still celebrate like an Italian. When is the cookbook out?
October 17th.
October 17th.
Yes.
Great. Mark that date, people. And Lydia, we're going to get you at Jubilee next year. So we're going to find a rock star worthy of you to interview you at Jubilee.
Okay. Looking forward to it.
It would absolutely be our honor.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. And everybody, we'll be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Le Cordon Bleu, the renowned culinary school, was founded in Paris 122 years ago by a young journalist named Mademoiselle d'Estelle. In 1895, she launched the first weekly culinary magazine called La Cuisinière Le Cordon Bleu. She invited subscribers to take part in free cooking lessons with the chefs featured in her magazine, and from there, the school was born. In the years since, Le Cordon Bleu's world-class instructors have taught French classical culinary techniques to everyone from home enthusiasts to food world legends. If you've dreamt of attending culinary school, maybe it's time to quit that boring corporate job and check out one of Le Cordon Bleu's 35 locations around the world, or add a short workshop or weekend program at one of its schools to your next vacation. Visit cordonbleu.edu for course descriptions, dates, and online registration. It's all possible at Le Cordon Bleu.
Hey there, Bomb Squad. This is Donna Yen from Team Cherry Bomb. My dog Teddy is a regular at Cherry Bomb HQ, and I care about where his food comes from just as I do my own. That's why Teddy and I are excited about Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Castor and Pollock's new line of pet food is made with ingredients like grass-fed beef and wild-caught salmon. I love that they care about Teddy as much as I do, and as for Teddy, he gives it two paws up.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. We will be talking to our next guest, Crystal Mack from Baltimore's Black Sugar, in just a second. But first, it's time for our Thrive Market Minute. Our newest partner at Radio Cherry Bomb is Thrive Market, a terrific online source for healthy and organic products at great prices. Thrive Market is offering all of you 35% off and free shipping on your first order, plus a 30-day trial membership. Just go to thrivemarket.com/cherrybomb. We gave Thrive Market a test drive the other day because we're still in the process of getting our new kitchen organized at Cherry Bomb HQ in Brooklyn, and we needed some pantry items. One of the nice things about having an office kitchen is that we make lunch every day with the team, or actually more accurately, our intern Romilly, who we nicknamed Rom the Bomb. Of course, she makes lunch every day. It's a nice way to get together, take a break from our computers, eat healthy, and not deal with all the garbage generated by takeout. And anyway, we decided to order a set of pantry basics, and happily, Thrive Market had everything we needed. Rom the Bomb helped me put the list together. Okay, ready? Crystal, ready?
Yeah.
These are our top 10 pantry items,
okay,
in no particular order. This is a very dramatic reveal. Okay, almond butter, coconut oil, olive oil, I know you're shocked by that one, flaky sea salt, apple cider vinegar, quinoa, chickpeas, canned tomatoes, crushed red pepper flakes, and in at number 10, Cholula.
Cholula.
The Mexican hot sauce,
yeah,
you know, with the wooden cap.
Yeah.
We're pretty addicted to that stuff. So that right there is the perfect Cherry Bomb pantry. You can find all of those items and more at great prices on Thrive Market. For the special offer, don't forget, just type in thrivemarket.com/cherrybomb. All right, we are here with Crystal Mack. She is a self-taught baker, writer, and creative consultant living in Baltimore, where she owns and operates her food and lifestyle concept, Black Sugar. Crystal also just launched Black Market, an artisan collective for creatives of color. Crystal Mack, it's been a long time coming, babe. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Carrie.
How are you?
I'm amazing. How are you?
I'm great. Good. I'm even better that you're here. Because I was worried about you for a little while.
Why?
Because you've been very honest on your social media that you just need a break.
Yeah, I needed a moment.
Baby needs a break.
Yeah. That's something I really, I feel like we should be, in the world that we live in now with social media, good or bad, I think we should be realistic and transparent with our followers and not make it seem like it's all roses. Like, there are awesome moments like now, but sometimes, like, you get burnt out and you're tired. And having, I know this sounds like a whining baby perspective from as a baby in the game, but having worked 7 days a week, sometimes 20-hour days, and just having a lot happening, good and bad, in life. You know, speaking at Jubilee was awesome and amazing. Going and traveling with friends, or, you know, my father recently passed. So imagine losing your father and also moving at the same time, but not being able to close your bakery because you signed a contract that says you have to be open 7 days a week. So you're going in super early in the morning, you're baking, and then you're going to go plan your father's funeral. It's a lot.
Yeah.
So for me, it was kind of like, I need to choose between, you know, me or, you know, the bakery. And right now, honestly, I am the bakery, so I had to choose me. and I'm happy I did. And I'm falling back in love with why I chose to do this in the first place. So it's good to always take that moment away and get some perspective.
It's hard though. I mean, it's, you know, when you have your own business and you are your business,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to be like, oh, I'm tired.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm cranky.
Yeah.
Oh, this and that.
Yeah.
You do have to kind of be like, you know, there's a little bit of a performer
mm-hmm.
in that, and you have to kind of be like up all the time, and it's kind of exhausting.
Oh yeah. It's definitely yeah. exhausting.
I just found this email, which, okay, it's so small, I can barely read it, but, we're doing a little something with this woman, Azalina, who's got a restaurant out in, San Francisco. It's a Malaysian restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and she has an out of office thing that you get automatically every time you email her.
Oh my goodness.
And it's so smartly worded. I'm going to read it to you.
Yeah.
It says, "Hello friends. I'm currently away from my computer. Being a small business owner is about buzzing around like a little busy bumblebee. Your email is extremely important to me. I will be in touch as soon as I get in. Life is full of excitement. Let's take it one day at a time.
Oh,
much
I
love."
That.
Isn't that great? Can we plagiarize that, Azalina?
The funny thing is, I literally thought that the other day. I was like, I need to get one of those auto replies that is just like, hey, I'm not going to respond to this email at midnight on my phone. So please do not email me. Not like that, but obviously way better worded like that. You know, something that says like, I value
sweet,
my
right?
private time. Yeah.
And I've actually gotten this email like 2 or 3 times now, and I still find it really charming every time I get it.
I love
and I'm
that.
Like, she's right. She's right. You know, she's going to back off, and when she answers, she'll answer.
Yeah. I love that.
All right. So where do we even start with you? You've got some new things going
yes.
on. What's this collective?
Black Market. So Black Market kind of sprung out of a need that I realized we had in Baltimore, or even just in the food space in general. With the bakery, with Black Sugar, I was in a space that was, you know, all of the owners of their respective food halls, for the most part, were men. They were white men. And even in the food scene in Baltimore is a city that is 65%, it's now 63%, 63% Black. And the representation in the food space is just very slim. I always see me, I always see a few other friends of mine that I know, but you don't see the wide range of Black makers and creatives in the food space and also in the art scene. And when you do, chances are they're not necessarily native Baltimoreans. So for me, you know, I just kind of felt like, wow, what do you do if you're not, this sounds really self-involved, not like that, but what if you do if you're not Crystal Mack? What if you didn't get to get into Cherry Bomb and you're not, you know, written up by the local papers? Like, how do you break it through? So for me, I decided to start the Black Market Collective with my friend Jermaine Bell, who has led a number of creative projects in Baltimore. He is an artist as well, And what we strive to do with Black Market is give those makers and creatives a voice by helping them with branding, also coordinating a number of like ancillary events around the city, happy hours where they can mingle and network and meet people. And not just about networking, but truly building real equitable relationships within the community. Am I getting too close to that?
Nope.
So you yeah, that's that is the goal for Black Market. And I'm really excited to see you guys soon, hopefully. I don't want to...
We can talk. Let's talk it
but
up.
Yeah, Black Market, we will be curating... helping to curate the event that will be at Trove in Hamden, which is a neighborhood in Baltimore that has long supported and loved Trove. They carry all of the issues, and they have a number of cookbooks by women that have been featured on the podcast and in the magazine. So I'm really happy that you guys can come out and support them. I believe it's October 23rd that we're going to do this.
I'm checking the date right now.
Yeah. And with that, that night we'll have some small bites from a number of women in food in the Baltimore food scene that, again, I don't believe have gotten the proper recognition that they deserve and are doing amazing things. So we have Chef Belinda Prattis. She's a home cook and personal chef, and she is of Korean and African-American descent. So her food often fuses like soul food and like kimchi and things like that. So she'll be having a small hors d'oeuvre that evening. We also have Chef Amanda Mack, who is not related to me. She's my soul sister, but she's not my sister. She'll be making a really lovely dish as well that evening. All small plates everyone will be having. And then we'll also be working with Mira Kitchen Collective, which is a new collective in Baltimore. They support women, refugees and immigrants in the Baltimore area that have recently resettled, that have a cooking background, and it's a worker-owned collective. So, for instance, one of the chefs that is one of the worker owners, her name is Aman. She came here and came in Baltimore in December of last year from Syria, and she was a line cook at Four Seasons in Damascus. And, you know, now relocating here, you have to start all over. And she makes amazing, amazing stuff. Grape leaves and, like, this beautiful saffron smoked rice pilaf. So she'll be making a small plate to have that night. And then also Lillian, she's from Cameroon. And I just attended one of her workshops and dinners where we made poulet DG, or Director General Poulet, so DG Poulet. So it's like a special dish that you make when someone is visiting your home in Cameroon. So she will be there making a small hors d'oeuvre as well. So just kind of showing the direction that the food scene is headed in Baltimore, as well as nationally. You know, we're embracing refugees. We're embracing immigrants. We're giving women of color an opportunity to shine and showcase their culture and what they're passionate about. And I think we can all connect in that. It doesn't matter if you're a woman or if you're a man or if you're a person of color, if you're white. That's something that we all connect with, is food. So I'm really excited about that.
You had the date correct. It is Monday, October 23rd. Yes, yes, yes. And I think it's $15, right?
Yeah, $15.
We'll have, I don't know if you have to buy tickets in advance. You might be able to do it at the door, too.
Probably be best to buy tickets in advance, because I have a feeling that this will probably sell out.
Oh,
so
that's exciting.
Yeah, so you probably want to buy tickets in advance. And that's a really a great price for small bites, and you're supporting women in food, you know.
You get to hang out with all of us.
Yeah. Ladies from Cherry Bomb will be down. You got to hang out with them.
We will be selling the cookbook that night separately, of course. Mm-hmm. But we will put a link on our website pretty soon so that people can buy tickets. So stay tuned for that. So what's going on with Black Sugar?
Black Sugar still exists. Great. I think that's the thing that people, you know, in Baltimore, it definitely still exists. Outside of that, everyone's like, what's happening? No, it still exists. So what happened there was just, again, I got burnt out and I said, enough is enough. And I'm between being burnt out, the emotional labor of being younger and the only woman owner and the only woman of color owner in a white dominated space, quite frankly, wore me out. And it was exhausting to go to meetings and hear people talk about, you know, hey, we're going to increase your rent because we saw a busser in the back eating ramen noodles and we felt sad that they couldn't afford the food here, when the easy solution to that which I suggested. I'm like, hey, well, why don't we just, I'm fine with you increasing the rent if you're increasing their hourly rate of pay. Their suggestion was to increase our rent to give the bussers $5 gift cards so that they could eat at the food court. That's not what I'm about, that I've worked in every position, I feel like, almost at this point in the food space. I've been a busser. I've been a barback. I've been a very bad bartender, line cook, owner, baker. And to me, that's not investing in the community. You're going to put on a wall a mission statement and say, you know, we're about equitable change and we want to be inclusive. But you can't even do that with your employees that you have working in the space. They can't even afford the food here. And again, I understand, you know, Baltimore is very much changing ever since the uprising. But it kind of goes into a bigger conversation of like, who is it changing for? Are we even including the people that we want to work into this space? Can they even enjoy it? No, they can't. So to me, the easiest response was like, okay, increase their rate of pay. I don't mind paying more to make sure that they have a living wage, that they get to decide how they want to spend it. Not, you know, gift card incentives. It's proven studies that gift card incentives do not work to drive, motivate employees.
You don't want a gift card. You want more money per hour.
Yeah, I can live and pay my rent, you know. So,
so are you still there?
No. Okay. So not there any longer. We left, and now we have our baked goods and shops in Baltimore, coffee shops in the area.
Are you doing wholesale?
Yeah, doing wholesale.
Oh, fantastic.
So wholesale is where it's at right now for me.
That's great.
I love that I can still drop off and be present in people's minds, and I love that people are still tagging and like reposting and loving what we do continuously. But if I can do it in a smarter and sustainable way for myself, which means, you know, I can make some brownies super early in the morning, drop them off, and not have to worry about like continuing to work the rest of the shift, and I can focus on growing Black Market. I can focus on being someone that brings opportunities to the food scene in my city, to women of color in my city, to creatives of color in the city, and kind of trying to bridge that gap, which I feel like is sorely needed. You know, it makes me happy. I can do both now. So it still exists. Black Sugar still exists. Right now, the website is down because we're revamping it so it can exist even more, because we're going to have an online shop. So you'll be able to order online, and
Will you ship to New York?
Possibly, yeah. Possibly. We've been exploring options and kind of thinking about Gold Belly, possibly. But I think to start, we'll maybe keep it local.
Okay.
Until we get down the whole logistics of like packaging up pie and things like that. Don't want you to get like a half of a broken pie. Half of it's on the box, half of it's down here, and you're just scraping.
Even more of a reason to get in the car and road trip down
to
our Baltimore event. Absolutely. Or just go visit Baltimore. I mean, it's a great
city.
It's
so much happening right now in the food scene in Baltimore, and I don't want anyone to get left behind, which is why we have Black Market. But we have a really strong base to build off of. We have a lot of women in food doing amazing things in Baltimore. One of the women actually who's allowing us to use her space for future markets for Black Market, Lane, she's awesome. Another awesome woman of color who's doing great things in food. She'll be opening a wine bar, natural wine bar in Baltimore soon. Natural wine in Baltimore. It's crazy, but I'm excited about it. My friend Heather, she has an amazing shop that's opening up in Greenmount, in the Greenmount neighborhood. In East Baltimore, we're headed east, I guess. And yeah, it's just so many people that are doing amazing things. And a lot of them are women. We're kind of taking over in Baltimore right now. So if you want to know how it's done, ladies, no, I'm kidding. If you want to see how it's done in a grassroots way where it can be inclusive, come to Baltimore. We've found a really interesting way to integrate food justice by working with our urban farms and, you know, really trying to be inclusive and making sure that people are paid livable wages. One of the restaurants that just opened, Ida B's Table, which is named after Ida B. Wells, they pay their employees $15 an hour, which in Baltimore, I know that doesn't sound like a lot where you're listening, wherever you're listening, but our minimum wage in Baltimore, I believe, is $9.55.
It's that much higher in New York. It's like $11.
So so to be in the food industry and making $15 an hour and have the opportunity to get health insurance, that's crazy. And that's a Black-owned business. That's, you know, it's insane that you know, we are really making progress and trying to make strides in the food community in Baltimore. Chef David Thomas is doing amazing things, and his wife Tanya. So I'm really proud of where we are in the food scene in Baltimore, and I'm happy that I can kind of represent on a national level and get more people excited about what we're doing.
Well, we can't wait to visit. Since we have you here, let's talk about food a little bit. Okay. So tell us about the kind of food that you make for Black Sugar.
Well, the things that people get really excited about, the three things that I would say they get really excited about are our brownies and blondies. So we have a miso blondie, and we have an activated charcoal brownie. I know everyone's like, activated charcoal. It's like such a trend right now.
It is a trend, but it's kind of fun when
it's
you
so
see all
fun.
Those like gothy baked goods.
Yeah, like a goth soft serve, I think I saw the other day. But
somebody had a black croissant.
Saw that. You tagged me in that. That is beautiful. I think you did. I was on Instagram, and you were like, check this out. I was like, whoa, this is crazy.
It was so cool, and somebody cut it in half.
Yeah, and the lamination.
So you could see both sides. I saw that. Wow. It looked like a spider web.
It was crazy. Yeah, so that. I'm interested to see. I was thinking about playing around with a charcoal croissant because that shows real skill. I mean, I'm self-taught and also taken a few workshops and classes, but charcoal really absorbs the moisture out of things. So we had an activated charcoal sourdough, but with that, the hydration had to be increased just because, you know, it absorbs the moisture. Kind of trailing off a little bit, sorry. So activated charcoal brownie, we had a croissant program, which is really amazing. And we have chocolate rose water croissant. And then we also have a ube croissant with toasted coconut. So it's a purple yam croissant.
And that's kind of become a signature item for you.
I love purple yam. And the funny thing is, it's just something every year with Black Sugar, I want to try to switch focus with different cultures, not in a culturally appropriating way, but in a way that like pays homage to different cultures and cuisines around the world. So the first year we focused on Filipino food. We even had a traditional Filipino kumain with Yana Gilbuena. Yana came. We met at Jubilee, and I was like, oh, you should come to Baltimore and do a kumain. And she like flipped out her date book and was like, okay, I'm here this day. And she's like, I can come next Tuesday. And we literally planned a kumain in 3 days. I was in Cuba with no access to like internet, phone, nothing. And we planned it in 3 days via email through like another person that was working for the Whole Food Hall at the time. And we got it accomplished, and it was beautiful. People were eating off of banana leaves. We had like pandan rice, and my employee Hannah, who makes historically based ice creams, it's called A Sweet History. She made a cheddar cheese and sweet corn ice cream, which is actually a very popular ice cream flavor in the Philippines, apparently.
I didn't know that either.
But yeah, so the ube croissant is really popular. And then also our macarons. We have really fun, interesting flavored macarons. We have like a fruity pebble lemon. We've had a caramel curry. Again, another activated charcoal brownie one. And we also have vegan ones as well. So we have our regular traditionally prepared ones, and then we have our vegan macarons, which are made with aquafaba, as opposed to egg whites.
I cannot wait to try some of this when we come down. We're going to have to order. You're going to have to take us on a little crawl of the bakeries your stuff when we come down.
I'm so sad that I didn't bring anything this time.
Wait, we'll be down there in a month.
True.
So October 23rd, everybody.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for ticket information. We would absolutely love to see you. Crystal, thank you. We're so happy you're a friend now.
Oh, I love you, you're incredible.
We love that you are part of Jubilee. If you want to know more about Crystal, there's a beautiful story about her in the new issue of Cherry Bomb with Martha Stewart on the cover. But thanks for making the trip up here. We always love seeing you.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for today's show. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Dave Tadashore, and much love to Castor and Pollux for making this season of Radio Cherry Bomb possible. If you're a devoted pet parent, be sure to check out Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. As always, we'd like to say a big thank you to Le Cordon Bleu. Be sure to visit cordonbleu.edu for information about this legendary culinary school. And don't forget, Thrive Market is offering Radio Cherry Bomb listeners 35% off their first purchase, plus free shipping and a 30-day membership. Check it out at thrivemarket.com/cherrybomb. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
Yang, founder of Silver Needle Tea Company, a tea purveyor based in New York City. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Chrissy Teigen, because she's down to earth about food and cooking. I love how she embraces her cultural background and shares that through the dishes she creates. Above all, she makes cooking look fun and easy.
Radio Cherry Bomb is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.